Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Dr. Jan Vandersand, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-815-9756, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Hello, Fran. And as you mentioned, Dr. Vandersand should be interesting. He'll be joining us in about 10 minutes. And his book, he's a trained physicist, but he also took part in a lot of experiments with physical mediumship. So he's going to be talking about proof in his eyes through personal experience. That'll be interesting. Boy, you know, I was looking at the price of gas today, and it's in some spots I know it's $4 a gallon, and they're saying maybe it's going to be $5.
How about heating oil?
Yeah, heating oil. It's
just ridiculous.
Crazy.
It's like almost $5 a
gallon. You need a mortgage to pay for that. But, you know, you read the newspaper, and, you know, but the turmoil going on all over the world, you always wonder if spirit... you know, it's said that they take an interest in our lives. You know, you think they take an interest in what's happening in the physical world as a global entity, or do you think that they don't really care about that? They're on to other things. I mean,
that's a really loaded question, but it does have an answer, because if you consider that what they're doing over there is much more important, so to speak, in our eyes than what we're doing over here. And what we're doing over here is like basic survival skills. We're living in an insane world. So let's not even get me started on that, because I could tell you a lot of things.
I'm not getting you started on that.
Don't get me started on that. But suffice it to say, what's going on in the Middle East and all around the world is people just clamoring for saying, I'm a person, don't treat me like this, and I'm important. And there are leaders that are saying, I'm more important than you, and I don't care about you. And that's not a spiritual way to live, and yet a lot of these countries are oriented towards one religion or another. So that's a sad state of being. But it's no better here in the United States. You know, we profess to have democracy in the Constitution, but it hasn't been showing itself lately.
Well, this wasn't a political discussion.
It's turning into one.
No, you turned it into what I was going somewhere.
Well, I was going with spirit. So the turmoil we have here, we've created because we are people, and we have free will, and we have free will to choose to be nice to our people, or we have free will to choose to abuse people and be greedy. And it seems that the trend here for leaders is to be abusive and greedy.
Well, what I was thinking about is, you know, we read, there's many, many books that are out and various documentaries that seem to espouse the theory that there's this law of attraction that's in place, and that if we have certain pure thoughts about something that we want, assuming that it's nothing that would be you know, criminal or harmful to other people, that we can manifest this, that the universe can somehow match our thoughts, and we will attract what we're thinking about. By the same token, if we have negative thoughts and think about so-called impure things or criminal or harmful things, we will also attract that.
So are you saying that these leaders, because they're having harmful thoughts, are creating the dismay that's...
Well, it's not the leaders. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, if this is true, you know, why do we have a world that's poverty-stricken? You know, is that because nobody realizes that they have the power to manifest good things in their lives? You know, I'm trying to reason that out.
Well, you're assuming that that's correct, that we do have the power to manifest things.
Yeah, I'm not assuming.
And
questioning.
You know, I never bought into The Secret. I don't think it's a secret. I think that we do all have a connection to a higher source, but it's not necessarily to get us things or to make us have things or even to have creature comforts.
Right.
It's to help us survive. And even if survival means, like they did in Eastern cultures, going out into the wilderness, laying down, meditating, and crossing over. If that's what it meant for survival, then that's what it meant for survival.
Well, if you have, if you're able to, let's assume that you are able. Well, do you know people? You've come across people in your life, you know, that have always seem to have an upbeat, positive attitude. They do a lot of good things for a lot of people, and they seem to attract other good things in their lives. Maybe more so on the other side. I've seen a lot of people that are constantly negative in everything that they do. They have bad luck, and they continue to have bad luck, you know. So you look at things like that, you say, okay, maybe this law of attraction is true. However, you know, on the flip side, we also come across people that are very loving and want good things for themselves and their family, and then tragedy, you know, befalls them. So, you know, what's going on there, you know? So, I mean, I'm going back and forth on this issue, you know. The reason that it intrigued me is that if it is true, then if we're entities of thought here in the physical and we remain entities of thought in the spiritual world by this law of attraction, I can manifest good things for my relatives and friends in spirit. You know, and they could do the same for us.
I think you're oversimplifying.
The law of attraction doesn't only span in this physical universe.
I think you're oversimplifying the concept of this law of attraction. I don't think it's, if I walk around, so now I'm going to, for the next 60 days, I'm going to walk around only saying upbeat, positive things, and only good things are going to happen to me. That's probably not going to happen.
Well, what these people are saying is not just upbeat things. You have to focus on one specific thing that you want to bring into your life, and all your actions go towards that goal.
Right. Okay, so if that's the story, so you're telling two different stories here. If that's the story, then you can't say, don't you know people who are always upbeat and blah, 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 and all good things come to them, because the truth is, no, I don't know anybody like that. And do I know people who are bad and negative and all bad things happen? No, I don't know people like that either. So I think these people that are trying to capitalize by selling these books about The Secret and laws of attraction and all that kind of, they just are oversimplifying it just to sell a book, to sell a concept, and they're the ones that are making the money and sitting back there and laughing at everybody else. And they don't need any law of attraction. They just managed to convince you that they had a secret that you had to pay for.
Or maybe then that was the thing they focused on, and they're bringing the wealth to themselves, and the book was a means to the end. So you can't say it doesn't work. Maybe
And they focused on the one thing. But you said that it would only work if it didn't harm other people. That's harmful to other people. Making them spend their money on garbage is harmful to other people, particularly in an economy that we have where people are hard pressed even to pay their rent to buy the gasoline for their car.
That's the whole purpose in trying to determine whether it's garbage or whether it's real.
And garbage.
I tend to be on the other side a little bit.
I think you can influence things. I think we've seen that in scientific experiments where people get together and the powerful energy can manifest things. Do we as individuals have that kind of energy individually anymore? I don't think so. I think we've moved so far away from our connection to the universe that we don't have it. It's the same as organs we don't use anymore.
Okay, and with that, we're going to go to our break, and when we come back, we are going to have a fascinating guest, Dr. Jan Vandersant, so stay with us, and we will be right back.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Jan Vandersandy. Our sponsor is the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Bob?
And Jan Vandersandy has published more than 80 scientific articles. He holds a doctorate in physics. He served professorships at Cornell University and the University of Witwatersrand in South Africa. He's worked at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He's currently the communications director for ViaSpace. Much of his spare time is spent analyzing and writing about psychic phenomena, and his book that we're going to be talking about today is Life After Death, Some of the Best Evidence. Welcome, Dr. Van de Sande.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for inviting me.
Pleasure to have you. So I guess a good place to start, and I'm sure you get asked this a lot, but I'm going to ask it anyways, you know, how does a trained physicist start getting interested in psychic phenomena?
Well, it's actually quite normal, because as a physicist, you're looking at the laws of nature and the laws of the universe. So what is more involved about life than the laws of the universe, and what happens to life and death? So you have to look at both sides of it. And when I was young, when I was in college, I started thinking about, wow, here we are. I take all these philosophy courses. They tell me about all the great things in life. But what happens after life? You know, is there what happens after death? And not many people can give you an answer unless, you know, you're just a believer. So I thought as a scientist, I would look into it. And it happened, really. I started reading about it when I was at Cornell University as an undergraduate, and then as a graduate student. And then I went to South Africa to do my PhD there on diamonds, interesting subject. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, I met my wife, or the lady who would become my wife, and we got married. And she was also interested in finding out about, you know, is there something after you die? So we started going to some spiritualist churches, because South Africa is very much like England, where they have a lot of these spiritualist churches where they give demonstrations by clairvoyants and mediums, and they give messages from supposedly dead relatives. But we went to some of those, and wasn't exactly successful. We really didn't get any messages. We were very disappointed. We met some other younger people there, and we formed our own circle. Or a circle is where you several people get together, and you sit, and you try to then, hopefully, if somebody goes into trance, or somebody gets the impulse to give messages and becomes clairvoyant. So we sat in a circle every week, and we tried to develop the mediumship of someone in the circle, or some or several of us in the circle. Just after we got married, while doing this, my wife and I, living in a small apartment, her name's Marlene, we went to a little furniture store across the street from the university to buy some furniture, pine furniture, for our little flat. Because we didn't have a lot of money, so we had to buy pine furniture. We didn't have to paint it, etc. So we went to the store, and we sat in some chairs, and there was a lovely lady there called Sarah. She was helping us, and we sat on this pine furniture, and boy, oh boy, it was hard. And I said to her jokingly, says, well, in our little circle, everybody will stay awake that way, because it's too so hard sitting on these little chairs, on these hard pine furniture chairs. Then she said to me, oh, you sit in a circle. And there I thought I was a big shot. And I said to her, oh, yes, you know, we have this developmental circle, and we're trying to develop some of the people here in our circle into mediums. She said, oh, that's interesting. She said, would you like to come to our circle? And my wife and I said, wow. We said, sure, it'll be very interesting. Her husband's name was Mickey. So they invited us, and they told us that one of the people who used to sit, or who sat in their circle, was a professor at the university, professor of anatomy in the medical school. So 2 weeks later, we go to their home, and this Professor Allen is there with his wife, Mickey and Sarah, who invited us, Marlene, my wife, and myself, and two or three other people. And, you know, we were a bit surprised. We walk into this room, windows totally covered, black, and a little light hanging there with a red light bulb, and they close the door, and so we sat down, and they turned the light off. So I said, oh, boy, turning the light off, you know, this is going to be interesting. They'll probably, you know, try to hoodwink us or something. But in the room, they had what I call a trumpet. It's like a megaphone. It was about foot and a half, 2 feet high, a cone-shaped, with luminous paint at the top and the bottom, so you could clearly see it sitting there in front of where Mickey and Sarah sat. Then Mickey and Sarah sat in the corner of the room with two chairs. They pulled the black curtain in front of them. The trumpet, this megaphone with the luminous paint, sat in front of it, and we sat in a semicircle around them. So we sat there, and then after a few minutes, Sarah went into trance, and an entity started speaking through Sarah. And his name, he said, he introduced himself as Brian. Very American accent, which is unusual because we were Americans. I mean, I was an American, my wife's South African, and Mickey and Sarah, of course, South Africans. So you get this person, this young person, speaking through her in trance with an American accent. And he says hello to the people there. He knows them all by name, comes to us, and welcomes us to the circle and hopes that we enjoy it. Because he thought this is, you know, it was a pleasure for him to have us, and he hoped it would give us something to think about. We had no idea what was coming. Believe me, no idea. And we were already impressed that having the Sarah go into trance, and we thought, well, that would be it. So then Brian says, okay, I'll come back later. So he disappeared, and all of a sudden, when he's gone, you know, with the black light, you see this trumpet. You could see it because of the luminous paint starts moving up into the air and starts floating around the room and then starts flying around the room like a bee would fly around the room, very rapidly flying around the room. And we're sitting there saying, wow, holy smoke, how the hell is he doing? How the hell is Mickey doing that? Because I thought it was fraud. He said, this could only be fraud. He must have had a string tied to it, but you didn't hear any buzzing, you know, of a string you would when you whirl something around. And it was much too high in the corners, and then it would come around and tap everybody on the head, tap everybody on the knees, never missed, never bumped into anybody, and this was pitch dark. And then the trumpet stopped right in front of everybody, in sort of in the middle of the room, in front of the semicircle of people sitting there, and just right in the middle of the ear, stopped, and a voice started speaking through it, a very German-accented voice of a lady called Mady, and she started speaking through this trumpet and spoke through it through several minutes. I don't even remember what she talked about. I was just stunned. We were just totally surprised. We said, wow, you know, how does Mickey do all this? Is he doing it? We were just, you know, as a scientist, you say, how can something just fly around the room? It just isn't possible. And then after Mady spoke for several minutes, the trumpet was slowly came down, sat down on the floor, and Brian started speaking again. But this time, Brian wasn't speaking. You couldn't hear the voice from behind the little curtain, but he was speaking sort of in front of the curtain, much higher up, where the voice came from. And that's something called direct voice, and I'll explain that a little bit later. But that's so Brian started talking to us again and asked us if we enjoyed that, and said, wow, that was very impressive. And he then talked for a while. Some other entities spoke. Tell you the truth, we don't even remember who, because we were just totally surprised.
Yeah. Now, so, oh, I'm sorry.
And I'm just going to explain how this all happens, because eventually,
right,
you know, we found out how this all happened. This is not fraud. And we sat with Mickey and Sarah for the next 8 years. Initially, we sat with them maybe every 2 or 3 weeks. They, when they got elderly, you know, they were already in their 60s. When they got into their early 70s, we sat with them maybe once a month or once every 2 or 3 months. We always had this trumpet fly around the room, always, even though it was just Marlene and myself sitting there with Mickey and Sarah. Brian always came through. The voice never changed. How this happens is, and I show pictures of it in my book, the trumpet is connected with ectoplasm to the medium. Now, let me describe ectoplasm. Have you ever had people talk about ectoplasm in...
We have, but most people, especially in the United States, I find are familiar only with mental mediumship, and ectoplasm is a pretty foreign concept, so please explain it.
Okay, yeah, because you're right. This is physical mediumship. Mental mediumship, as you directly point out, Bob, is when a channeler gives messages, and the channeler is awake and gives messages from relatives, like you see on TV. You know, the Jim from Prague and a few of these others.
Right.
But this is physical mediumship, where the medium is in trance, where ectoplasm comes from the medium. And this ectoplasm is attached to the trumpet. And ectoplasm has been around for, I would say, 150 years at least. It's been photographed by many psychic researchers, by scientists. Professor Richet, who won the Nobel Prize for chemistry or neurochemistry, or neurophysiology, sorry, he won the Nobel Prize for Physiology in 1922. He analyzed ectoplasm, and it's basically material that comes from the body of the medium, and from they take some from the sitters as well, supposedly. And this is white stuff, and it then from the medium attached to the trumpet makes the trumpet fly around. I have some beautiful photographs in my book showing how this ectoplasm is attached either to the mouth or the nose or the solar plexus of the medium and is attached to this trumpet, which then flies around. Now, of course, this was all in the dark, so you might say, well, how do we know it was ectoplasm? Well, Marlene and I were very lucky once to also have seen ectoplasm. Mickey and Sarah were just not strong enough mediums to have the red light on when the ectoplasm came from Sarah. And the reason is that ectoplasm is very sensitive, and light can damage it. Red light is of lower energy. So red light would not cause damage if the medium is strong enough. So one evening, not several months later, they invited friends of theirs, Kitty and Max, who were well into their 70s already. And Kitty was a tremendous materialization medium. And she would produce ectoplasm, but she'd really stop sitting. But they had invited Kitty and Max, just for our benefit, to show what ectoplasm looked like. So this time, Kitty would sit behind the curtain with Mickey and Sarah. There were three chairs there now. But they were allowed to turn the red light on. And then when Kitty and Sarah were in trance, they opened the curtain so we could clearly see Kitty sitting there, Sarah sitting there in trance. And we saw this white stuff pouring out of the nose of Kitty. It poured out of her nose, over her body, and went onto the floor. You're sitting there looking at this and saying, I don't believe this. You know, it is just unbelievable to see. And you say you must be dreaming, but everybody else is seeing it, so it's not a hoax or a mass hallucination. It was really happening. Then one of the guides speaking through Sarah said to one of the sitters, he could pick up this ectoplasm, and he could hold it up and walk towards the side of the room. So he had this whole sheet of ectoplasm, about 6 feet high. He was holding it with his hand, tied to the nose of Kitty. And this big sheet was like cheesecloth almost. You could smell it. It had a distinct odor. I would say it was like a body odor even. And it was attached. It was there. And then the entity speaking through Sarah said, told the sitter there to drop it, to let it drop to the floor. It dropped to the floor and then slowly went back into Kitty. And that was the ectoplasm we saw. There are photographs in my book of mediums where exactly this, it comes from the nose, covers the body of the medium. And then what we didn't see, because Kitty had just, she was in her 70s and just didn't produce materializations any longer. But our professor friend, Jack Allen, he sat with another medium in Johannesburg where he saw this ectoplasm. But there it went even further. There this ectoplasm would form into entities. Now, you might say, this is beyond belief, this is nonsense. Well, it's photographed. And I have some photographs in my book taken by Professor Allen with a professional photographer. They used infrared film in red light, and they photographed what are called full materializations, where the ectoplasm forms into a spirit entity. And this entity then looks like a human being just clothed in white and starts speaking to the sitters in the room.
And you do have a cover, on the cover of your book, you have a photograph of one of those full materializations.
That is the one Professor Allen took.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you have a copy of the big photograph there, but
yeah,
what is so fascinating is, you might say, oh, that's somebody dressed up in a cloth or dressed up. Well, first of all, if you look at all the folds, the details, this is not somebody just wrapped them, dressed up. But more interesting is, you look at the bottom between his feet, what do you see? Lots and lots of this ectoplasm. And then next to the feet of the sitter there, who's talking, who's holding hands with the spirit materialization, you see more of this ectoplasm. And that ectoplasm actually went back to the medium because it's still attached to the medium. Now, if somebody was going to be fraudulently walk around in some white sheet, which is clearly you can see from all the folds, it's much more sophisticated than that, would he drag around lots of this other stuff so he could even fall if he's not careful?
Right.
No way.
Now, the ectoplasm, as you described, is exuded from the medium. Does it always return to the body of the medium? Or does it ever just dissipate on its own?
Always disappears back to the medium. Always.
Back,
back to the medium.
Yeah, it always, and the most interesting thing, which I was going to get into, and I don't know when you have a break, but that gets even more interesting, is that this particular medium that Professor Allen photographed, unfortunately, he didn't want to people to know who he was. You know, even in those days, it was a stigma about, oh, you believe in psychic phenomena, you must be a nutcase. And when I was a professor at Cornell, I was so afraid to talk about it, you know, because it could ruin my chances for tenure.
Right.
But then, I can talk about this later, but then an incident came up where I did talk about it. But these entities then speak to sitters, and very often these materializations are relatives of the sitters. The sitters would then recognize the person, and they would start talking to each other, you know, as a husband to a wife or parents to a child who had died, and they would talk and they would provide them with evidence that they were still alive.
Now, you alluded to this a little bit earlier, but in direct voice, so the theory is that the spirit entity can use the ectoplasm to form, you know, for lack of a better term, like a voice, a spirit.
It's called a voice box. You're correct.
Yeah.
It's called a voice box, yes.
And then that enables, it's like the medium by which the spirit can manifest voice, right?
Absolutely. And the most phenomenal case, and I talk about it in my book, is someone called Leslie Flint in England, who really was a medium anywhere between the 1920s to the 1970s or 80s. I mean, he had a phenomenal long life. He would be awake. Listen, it's just phenomenal. He would be awake, but the spirit entity would talk several feet away from him, using ectoplasm from his body and talking there while he's still awake, and they're using the ectoplasm as a voice box, and the spirits would talk and give messages. And what they did with Leslie Flint was they tied his mouth, they put liquid in his mouth, and still the voice would just keep on talking while all that was done.
Yeah. And I noticed in history many of these physical mediumship, like, you know, Leonora Piper and Eileen Garrett, and as you mentioned, Leslie Flint, you know, they allowed themselves to be subjected to somewhat barbaric, conditions, as you mentioned, with their hands and feet tied, with gagged and so forth. And I guess they did this because they realized that there was a lot of fraud in the profession.
Yeah.
This was their way of really proving and getting people to believe what was happening.
Bob, you hit it exactly on the head. And the reason is there's fraud in everything. I mean, Bernie Madoff, talk about fraud.
Right.
But he convinced people. But whenever there's money involved, there's fraud. And a lot of these mediums charged money. Leslie Flint made a living, but he didn't earn a lot of money, but he made a bare living by giving these sittings. Leonora Piper never charged. It was unbelievable. She was a medium in Boston, and she was a medium for something like, again, 50 years, lived an incredible long life. She was tested by just about every researcher, and they all said there was no doubt about it, she was genuine. And she gave evidence, and I have some in my book. I talk about some of the cases, the evidence she provided. Some of these researchers originally thought that she was a fraud. They said there's no way she can be real. After they sat with her for many, many years, they said she was genuine. There was no doubt about it.
Hmm.
But that is trance mediumship, where you can always use the argument that the skeptics use, where they say, oh, that's just her personality, her secondary personality speaking through her and giving messages, and she's using telepathy to read the minds of the sitters. So they use all those arguments to poo-poo the evidence that she gave over all those years. That's why I've concentrated in my book on physical mediumship, because you cannot poo-poo physical mediumship. You cannot poo-poo a materialization when there's no doubt about it that it is not fraud. Like there's a current materialization medium that you know about, David Thompson in Australia, who is the same thing. They tie his arms, they tie his hands, they tie his feet, and he still produces ectoplasm.
Right.
And they put a gag in his mouth. So what these mediums don't go through to prove that what they do is genuine. And then you get these skeptics and debunkers saying, oh, I could do that too. And I had a run-in with him that, and I can talk about it a little later, with this Randy, who supposedly is a great magician. He's a hoax. And I'll show why. They all say this is all nonsense. It is not nonsense when you can photograph materializations like I have in my book, ectoplasm. They cannot produce it. Magicians can't when they're tied to a chair. And I quote in my book many, many magicians or illusionists who have gone to these sittings with some of these mediums, and they walk away saying there's no doubt, they say, it was genuine. There's no way they could do that themselves. No way it could be fraud.
Right.
So you have case after case after case. Do you think the skeptics and debunkers ever read that? Absolutely not. They don't read those cases. There is so much good evidence out there. And that's why I take in my book, I take some of the best I could find, where
right.
there was no doubt. Like Leslie Flint, he's never, ever been suspected of being fraudulent for all his years. And he gave incredible evidence using this direct voice.
And the book we're talking about is Life After Death, Some of the Best Evidence by Jan W. Vandesande. Well, there's a lot more to talk about. What we're going to do now is go to a break, and when we come back, I wanted to talk a little bit more about physical mediumship and, as you mentioned, some of the cases that present the best evidence. So stay with us, and we will be right back.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest here tonight is Dr. Jan Vandersande. This show is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. With these hard times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show, they want to see it continue, they love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website. And again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find your items in one of their 800-plus online stores, the list is huge, a portion of what you spend, again, is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. We have upcoming events. Starting with March, on March 25th, Laura Lynn Jackson is the certified medium conducting spirit communication at Connecting with Your Child Across the Veil. It's for bereaved parents, grandparents, and adult siblings of children who are on the other side. Laura Lynn will be bringing through 10 children in spirit. We have two spots left in this event, March 25th, 7 p.m., at the Forever Family Foundation Conference Room in Oceanside, New York. Moving on to April, on Earth Day, we have our Holiday of the Earth raffle being drawn. You can win one of five. Well, you probably can win five if you have enough entries in there. People have won more than one of the raffles. But a one-hour phone reading with a certified medium. The mediums offering raffles are Bobby Allison, Laura Lynn Jackson, Lynn LeClaire, Dave Campbell, and Kathy Tao. It's $5 a chance. You could go online and buy as many chances as you can. And then moving into May, we have our big Transforming Grief into Hope and Understanding weekend retreat, exploring the afterlife. It will include dream visits with our facilitator, Rita Dwyer, induced after-death communication with Mo Teresa Hanna. We also have Kim Russo, a spiritual medium, and Doreen Malloy, research medium and grief recovery specialist, will be doing psychic empowerment, medium spirit communication, and grief recovery. This is an all-inclusive weekend. It includes all meals, blah, blah, blah. Having trouble getting it all in. Meals, snacks, parking, room and board, and the conference itself. It's May 20th to 22nd. It is in Chester, Connecticut at the Guesthouse Retreat and Conference Center. Again, you can reserve your seats online. If you're a member, you get an early bird discount, which is at our cost, and those rates are online at the Forever Family Foundation website. And that's it.
Okay, and thank you for that. Mouthful.
Good, nice.
And we're going back, speaking with Dr. Jan Vandersande, author of Life After Death, Some of the Best Evidence. You know, Doctor, you mentioned earlier that most of the one of the objections that come about is that a lot of this phenomena takes place in the dark. But although some mediums use, you know, red light, you also mentioned in the book night vision. Like, so if you had night vision goggles, would that be harmful to the mediums?
It could be, because the night vision does, they do emit ultraviolet. Infrared. So it's not. It shouldn't be dangerous. It shouldn't be any more than the red light. But yeah. Like I said, most mediums do it in red light. The sad thing is that David Thompson, the current one in Australia, who, by the way, I'm having come out to to Los Angeles in February of next year, and you might be able to get him to New York because he's now demonstrating all over the world.
Right.
And but he is still doing it in the dark.
Right.
But the most impressive medium, materialization medium, was Alec Harris. I spend a whole chapter on him in my book. And
was he the medium, Dr. I know there was one medium in your book which was pretty fascinating. You know, while he was locked in the cabinet, he appeared outside the room.
I know. This is something, as a physicist, you say it is not possible.
Right.
And I know, and all I can say is I could quickly tell the story, that this Alec Harris was born in Wales, never believed in spiritualism or anything, but his wife sort of pulled him and dragged him along to a spiritualist church where he was told he would become a famous medium, and he sort of poo-pooed it. But he did eventually sit in the development circle, and he became a materialization medium. This medium, in red light, now listen to this, Bob, you won't believe this. He produced, on any evening where he sat, anywhere from 20 to 30 different full materializations. 20 to 30 different materializations. In other words, a materialization would come, walk around the room, talk to the sitters, people would recognize him, talk to him, that materialization would go back, a different one would come out. Now, how anybody can say that's fraud, you need your head read. And the people there, a lot of them being magicians and everybody who checked the room, everything. And Alec was tied to the chair. So it wasn't him dressed up. And, well, if people recognized the person, how could it be him anyway? But he then eventually moved to South Africa with his wife because their son moved to South Africa. And believe it or not, our friends Mickey and Sarah used to sit with Alec when he was in South Africa. And they told us about sittings with him where one of the materializations was a Native American Red Indian. And he was Mickey's guide because a lot of us have guides and these guides would then materialize. He was a big man who materialized there, and he asked Mickey to come up and touch him. So Mickey came up and gently touched his full materialization. And then this Native Indian American said to Mickey, okay, hit me. And Mickey said, no, I'm not going to hit you. I'm going to hurt Alec because the ectoplasm is tied to Alec Harris, the medium. He said, no, you can hit me as hard as you want. So Mickey tapped him, and the guy said, come on, Mickey, that's not hitting. Hit me. So Mickey started hitting him, and he hit him as hard as he could, and he wouldn't budge, nothing. The full materialization would stand there. His hand would hit it, bang, and the materialization would just keep on talking.
Huh.
Then Mickey told me what happens then is they have seen this full materialization would start sinking into the floor while still talking to them. So he's talking to the sitters while sinking into the floor and the ectoplasm slowly going back to the medium. And at the end, his head would still just sit above the floor, still talking to them. And they're sitting there thinking, how is this possible? But it happened over and over again.
Yeah.
And then eventually would sink in and the materialization would go back to Alec Harris. One incident they described, I as a scientist I don't know how to explain it. But one of the sittings, Alec Harris was sitting in the corner behind this black curtain that they had. And the guides then said, speaking through Alec, we're going to have a surprise for you. And it was quiet. Nothing happened. And after a few minutes, the doorbell rang. And everybody said, wait a minute, what's going on? And the guide said, go answer the door. They went to answer the door, and who was standing outside? Alec Harris. The medium had been transported outside the seance room to in front of the house. Now, that means they would have had to dematerialize him and rematerialize him.
Star Trek.
I hate to say it. It sounds phenomenal. As a scientist, I'd have to see it to believe it myself. But one thing does exist, and those are called apports.
Yeah.
And I talk about those in my book about Harrison. And I have a whole section on him and his wife. Harrison, he actually recently passed away to the spirit world a few months ago.
Yeah.
He wrote a book about his mother, who was a tremendous materialization medium. She even produced materializations in white light, unbelievable. But they would get apports. They would have the room totally closed, and all the doors shut, windows shut, and red light on. But all of a sudden, flowers would appear in the room. And where did these flowers come from? And the guide said they were picked outside somewhere around, and they were just brought into the seance room by the guides. Now, the only way that can happen is if they can, in the spirit world, dematerialize a physical object. Remember, what do we consist of? Of atoms. Atoms are nothing but protons, neutrons, and electrons. That's basically what we consist of. So they can take something like a flower, dematerialize it into atoms, take it through the wall. Well, remember, the wall is nothing but atoms again with big holes in it. It's like Swiss cheese if you're the size of an atom. And then rematerialize it. I know these apports exist. How do I explain it? That's all I can explain. I just, as a scientist, as a physicist, all I can say is there are laws involved here that we just don't understand yet.
Yeah. You know, it seems to me, you know, as with in this realm of science of investigating so-called paranormal phenomena, the problem from a scientist standpoint is that much of the things that go on are spontaneous in nature. And now here you seem to have some materialization mediums that can do this on a fairly consistent basis. You know, they usually get an apport or a materialization. So don't you think that somehow we have to get some scientists, more of them involved? I know they were involved 100 years ago. But in today's physicists, you know, to really go in there with some sort of, I'm sure there's some sort of equipment that can be developed that would not be harmful to the ectoplasm.
Well, that you're right, Bob. That's an excellent point. And yeah. Myself, as a scientist, I finally wrote this, and I hate to say it, after I retired. But again, because of the ridicule that people would throw on you.
Right.
I was in the business world. After I was a professor, I was in the business world. If you would go talk about this, or where I was a scientist, people look at you like you're a nutcase.
Yeah.
Because they think they know better. They say, oh, that's nonsense. It can't exist. You know, nonsense.
Right.
But I did it as a scientist. But you're right. And the trouble is, what do you do besides taking photographs or film? What else can you do? And what else can you do but bring all this evidence that's out there? It's a tremendous amount of evidence of all these scientists, physicists, Nobel Prize winners who investigated it. I'm not a Nobel Prize winner, but I'm a scientist. I've published extensively in the scientific literature. I investigated this, and to me there was no doubt beyond any question that these materializations, this ectoplasm, these trumpets flying is real. They are real phenomena. Are we talking to the spirit world? What other explanation is there? What other explanation is there if these spirit entities take the form of a materialization that somebody in the room recognizes? What kind of evidence can you have?
When there were such a seemingly large number of these materialization mediums, you know, years ago, you know, why do you think there are so few such mediums today? You know, I mean, what's changed?
I've addressed that in my book, actually, because I think there are three different reasons. One of them is that in the old days, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, there were spiritualist churches where they had development circles. That's how Alec Harris, Leslie Flint, and others developed their mediumistic gifts. So they would go to these developmental circles. That doesn't exist anymore. Nowadays, also, there's this danger of getting hurt as a medium. When you're a materialization medium or a physical medium, anybody who would touch the ectoplasm, and it happened to Alec Harris, in one of his seances, some people got in under false pretenses, claiming they were different people, and one of these people jumped on the full materialization. They jumped on the ectoplasm, thinking it was Alec Harris dressed in a sheet. What happened was the ectoplasm shot back into Alec, into his solar plexus, and he was sick for a long, long time. He was critically sick, and he was never the same medium afterwards. So you can, even, you know, do tremendous damage to the medium. So when you do have a seance with a materialization medium, extreme caution has to be taken, that no one turns on the white light, that no one touches the ectoplasm unless expressly told so. So that there's a danger. So why would people risk this? I am convinced there are materialization mediums, but they don't perform for the public because it is risk involved. Also, the world has changed. We are the world of internet, computers, texting, Facebook, Twitter. This is a different world than there was. Remember, 100 years ago, people had nothing. What did they do in the evening? They went to spiritualist churches, they sat in seances, they developed. Nowadays, the interest isn't there. Our society has changed. And I find it very sad. Yeah. That it is totally different emphasis nowadays. Do you ever see somebody not walking around with a cell phone, or they're either texting or talking on the phone?
Right.
I mean, it's a different world nowadays. With the internet, all kids do is play games on the computer and the internet.
Well, you make a good point. You know, and I talked to you briefly, you know, off the air about this, but, you know, as I mentioned, you know, we talked to a great many scientists, and many present evidence of survival, but they don't go quite as far as saying personally, you know, that they believe, you know, in survival. And I think the difference in talking to you is that you're talking not only as a scientist, but from the perspective of somebody who's had the experience personally. And I think that's the difference in talking to you. You're not sitting on the fence. I mean, you're absolutely convinced, you know, more convinced based upon your personal experience, perhaps, than your scientific knowledge. So is that the difference? I mean,
You hit it right on the head, Bob. Okay. I can't explain it, but I am 100% convinced these phenomena are genuine. And that's why I wrote the book. I'm never going to make a profit on it. But I don't care, because I published it myself. I couldn't get a publisher to publish it, because materializations, they laughed at me. And I said, it's real. Read it. Read the book. The evidence is there. I'm not a nutcase. I have witnessed this over and over again. The people I sat with, Mickey and Sarah, the Professor Allen, you know, professor of anatomy, took photographs of these things. They sat with Alec Harris. I have so much direct evidence of all these things being true. That's why I just had to do this. I talk to where I can. I give lectures on it to try to convince as many people. If the evidence is there, read it. You'll feel a lot better about life after death. Mm. I cannot explain it. Can I explain the soul? Can I explain the spirit body? Can I explain how apports are come through solid walls? No, I cannot explain it. There are laws involved we don't understand. Mm. But it doesn't mean it's not real.
Absolutely. We keep trying to put things in terms that we know, the natural laws that apply to our existence, but that may just be the tip of the iceberg.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the book, again, is Life After Death, Some of the Best Evidence. And we've been talking with Jan W. Vandersand, Sandy, and that's Vandersande. There is, as always, there's a link on our Forever Family website, an Amazon link. If you'd like to purchase this book, you can click on that. There's also some information on our website about the book. The book goes into some of the history of mental and transmediumship, direct voice materializations, and as Dr. Vandersande said, this is the kind of stuff that sounds preposterous, but when you examine it, it may put a bit different perspective on things. So I appreciate your knowledge and your candor, and I thank you so much for joining us. And I know we just touched the surface, so I hope you'll come back and join us again.
Well, Bob, thank you for having me, and I'd love to talk about it, and I hope I've given some hope and help to some listeners out there.
I believe that you did. So thanks again, and have a good evening.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's it, folks. You know, some of that stuff, when you see some of these photos, it's either you're going to believe it or not, but there's a lot of evidence. So
let's ask our listeners now to please join us in our healing energy circle. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Chuck Rocket, Vicky Steffi, Janet Mayer, Judith Lachman, and Wendy Lippo. Now let us give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico. I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was by Masuro Emoto on May 9th, 2010.
And we'd like to say that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.